This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards. Thousands of Americans are in a persistent vegetative state. Some have been like that for years or even decades. Every day, families and medical caregivers agonize in deciding whether to continue or withhold life-sustaining care. For today's installment in the series on making decisions at the end of life, NPR's Richard Knox talked with a woman who went through this recently and to the caregivers involved in that decision.
Leo McManus was his name, but everybody knew him as Buddy. He was an outgoing guy with dark hair, striking blue eyes, and a way with the ladies.
I thought he was handsome, needless to say, but he really was.
Dorothy McManus talks about Buddy as she sits under the clock in her kitchen. Each hour on the clock displays a different grandchild's photo. Buddy and Dorothy raised five daughters in this modest house in Foxborough, Massachusetts. He worked for the Postal Service.
We had been married 46 years. It was a good marriage, and we had, like everybody else, we had our ups and downs and ins and outs, but we lasted always through it, and he did love me very much. I know that, and I loved him.
8 years ago, Buddy McManus's heart stopped, but rescue workers resuscitated him. Doctors put a portable defibrillator into his chest. Over the years, it saved his life a few more times. But in October, a blood vessel in Buddy McManus's brain burst. Suddenly, he was in a coma, and the doctors were telling Dorothy that Buddy's brain was profoundly, irreparably damaged. When she saw him, he was breathing with the aid of a machine.
You see, when I looked at him, I saw him breathing, and I couldn't fathom the fact that he wasn't breathing himself. Watching him breathe up and down, I kept saying, "See? He's breathing, he's breathing, he's not gone, and I had a terrible time with that. I really did.
Buddy McManus was treated here at the Massachusetts General Hospital. Its neurological intensive care unit is the busiest in the Northeast. Dr. Walter Koroshetz is its medical director.
In this unit, we get, on a daily basis, patients who have suffered a major brain injury, and the question that always comes up is, you know, what is the purpose of the treatment, and when is that treatment futile?
Down the hall is a woman who's emerging from a coma into what doctors call a persistent vegetative state.
So in this room we have a woman that's been here probably going on 2 weeks.
How old is she?
She is 52 years old. Hmm. Yeah, very sad.
Nurse Janice Carey and Walter Koroshek stand outside the woman's room, while another nurse gives her a neurological exam. She's looking for any glimmers of awareness.
Open your eyes! Can you open your eyes? Squeeze my hand? Squeeze my hand! Can you wiggle your toes? Wiggle your toes!
With all the impressive equipment here, this is really the only way doctors and nurses can measure consciousness.
Look over here. Oh, she doesn't follow any commands, so that's about it.
She's been here a month, was in coma to begin with, and now is starting to open her eyes, which is the transition to the vegetative state, where it's eye-opening.
She looks awake, but it's not necessarily an encouraging sign. Families increasingly confront this dilemma. In the past, many patients died from brain swelling and other complications after strokes, hemorrhages, and head trauma. Today, doctors can often control these fatal side effects and then sustain life with respirators and medicine. Koroshet says as a result, many patients emerge from coma. They have wakeful periods when their eyes are open. They grimace and make chewing motions. They move their arms and legs. But like this 52-year-old stroke patient, people in a persistent vegetative state aren't truly conscious or aware. Koroshet says some patients reach an even more troubling plateau, called a minimally conscious state.
Where the patient is eyes open, can say one word or so in a very kind of automatic fashion, and takes a long time to get a response out.
The most difficult patient Koroshetz ever had is a man in a minimally conscious state. He was a successful business executive of 40 when he suffered a brain hemorrhage. 12 years later, he's still in a dreamlike state. Sometimes he'll smile and say hello or remember his children's names. The rest of the time, he stares into space.
The crux of the the situation is, how do you know, given the patients in state X today, what will they be in tomorrow or next week or next month or 6 months or a year?
A lot of times it's, you just have to wait and see, and it can be excruciating for the family and everyone.
Nurse Janice Carey. Meanwhile, families can't avoid momentous choices, decisions that once they're made are very hard to reverse.
The decision that that gets you rolling here is the tracheostomy, which is a tube into the throat that allows you to hook up to a respirator, and the placement of the tube into the stomach, called the G-tube, for gastric tube, and that maintains feeding. And with those two support systems, people can live for many years. I've seen people persistent vegetative state for decades.
Korchet's thought buddy McManus might emerge from coma into a vegetative state, but not beyond that. He says it's about as clear-cut as these situations ever are. But for Dorothy McManus, the decision to turn off Buddy's respirator was anything but clear-cut.
I really did not want to let him go. I wanted him to stay there. As long as I saw any signs of life, I wanted him to stay there.
Buddy hadn't told her what he'd want in this situation. He had no living will. The awesome decision was in Dorothy's hands. So Dorothy and her five daughters and their husbands gathered in a hospital conference room. Korchet saw Dorothy McManus's ambivalence.
To take part in her husband's death is what the way she put it, that was something that she wanted to avoid at all costs. And when I tried to explain to her that she wasn't really taking part in his death, that what had happened to him, it happened to him, and it's no one's fault, and she's acting in his stead.
But still, Dorothy couldn't make the decision on her own, so she asked her daughters for a vote.
When I saw the hand go up, it put a shock through me like I couldn't believe when I asked, who votes for Dad to be taken off the respirator?
No hesitation.
No hesitation with any of them. They all just moved their hands like, yes. You know, I went in and I talked to him and said all kinds of things. All his family went in and we talked to him for quite a while, and he was unconscious the whole time we were talking. But I don't know, I think the words got through, and he just went peacefully, but it was a decision that was the hardest thing I will ever have to do in my life. But I'm glad I made it. I think I saved him pain and suffering and a life that wasn't a life.
Not all families reach agreement this way. The Mass General Staff says disagreement is often part of the process. They try to guide families through it to a decision they can live with. Richard Knox, NPR News, Boston.